Welcome to an opening day edition of the Calling It Podcast. We are recording this on the morning of the 28th, getting ready for some baseball. I'm Alex Barth, as always, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. A quick note on the program. This is the beginning of a new format for us. We really got screwed last week with the once-a-week recording between, everything that happened over the weekend. Chris Sale's contract, March Madness, Johnny Football's debut, a bunch of Patriots news, Rob Gronkowski, all of it. So we will now be doing 2 to 3 20 to 25-minute shows per week, touching on one topic. It will allow us to cover more, talk to you more often. That being said, less time per show, less time for pleasantries. We want to get into it on opening day. And we have a guest joining us to talk about the Red Sox and the MLB season. You know him from 98.5, the Sports Hub, a friend of the program, Matt McCarthy. Matt, thanks so much for coming on.
Guys, always good to be on with you. Happy baseball.
It is great. You know, it's sunny out. I didn't have to wear a heavy coat. It certainly does feel like baseball. And it still sort of feels like 2018. And I want to start here with you, Matt. Really almost no roster turnover for the Red Sox. As little turnover as I can remember in some time. And with 2018 having the mystique it did, even for a World Series year, it seemed to have an extra level of mystique. And it definitely still feels like that the Red Sox are just going to come back and hit the ground running. There's no new players. There's nothing like that. They're going to come in and just pick up where they left off. Is there a big change? And I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask you, what's the change that people aren't looking at from 2018 to 2019?
Well, I think maybe the change that people aren't looking at, Alex, would be the contract situation surrounding a lot of players. I mean, listen, the change that people are looking at is the only one. It's the obvious one. It's the bullpen. Okay. And we can get into that in a minute. But when you think about one thing that could affect this team that maybe people aren't talking about, I think it's probably the contract situations for a lot of these players. Mookie Betts is 2 years away from free agency. So is Jackie Bradley Jr. Rick Porcello is a year away from free agency. Xander Bogaerts is a year away from free agency. So, you know, like half the team essentially is a year away or 2 years away from free agency. How does that affect this group? How does that affect them in the locker room? Are guys looking ahead to their next contracts? Chris Sale has already gotten his deal. That's taken care of. So that's obviously one thing the Red Sox don't have to worry about. But this kind of feels like the last hurrah for this team, doesn't it? Because in a year from now, you know, Xander Bogaerts could be gone. Rick Porcello could be gone. You don't have a first baseman under contract a year from now. You know, what do they do with Mookie Betts? Does he want to be here? Do they, honestly consider trading him if they feel like they're not going to be able to keep him, if he wants $400 million and they don't want to pay him that? Like, a lot's going to change a year from now, in many ways, almost in the exact opposite of how nothing changed from last year to this year, but this is the last year it's going to be like that. So I'm really interested to see how this team reacts and how this team responds to that.
Does the fact that a lot of these guys are coming up on contract years, does that make anyone specifically more expendable? Do you expect that the team to part ways with anyone specifically before the trade deadline? You mentioned Mookie Betts. Is he someone you could see leaving, or is there anyone else that sticks out to you?
I don't think so, not from the major league roster. I think obviously they're going to be in a position where they will be adding at the trade deadline. I would be shocked if they aren't adding at the trade deadline. You know, they're going to need bullpen help, clearly. I don't think they're in a position where they're going to trade anybody from their major league roster this year. You've committed to Rick Porcello being in a contract year. You've committed essentially to Xander Bogaerts being in a contract year. You're not going to trade those guys at this point. Next offseason, I think, is the really interesting one. What type of direction is this team going in? The Mookie Betts thing, I think, is going to hang like a dark cloud over this team for the next 2 years. Do you consider moving on from him next offseason after you lose a couple guys anyway and you say, you know what, we're going to reset, you know, the way that we're going as an organization? That would be a huge move. I mean, I don't want to just like throw that out there and be like, oh, I guess they could trade Mookie Betts, because we know that would be one of the biggest trades they've ever made in their history. Is it possible, though? Maybe, I guess. Is it possible that they move on from somebody like Jackie Bradley Jr. next offseason, too? Maybe. I'm sure they could potentially consider that, you know, depending on which way they're trending after 2019. But I don't think anything happens this year. I mean, this is for next offseason, not at any point this year.
I just want to remind everybody, because you're throwing the Mookie Betts trade out there. This year, December 26th, will be the 100-year anniversary of the Babe Ruth trade.
Oh, God,
and,
don't bring it up.
You know, you say trading a player like that is something that would happen once in a century. If you stick to that, the Red Sox are due, right? I do want to get back into this upcoming season, though, and the team we're going to watch take the field later today and for the next few months. Most of us will watch. The West Coast road trip sucks for people who have to get up early like Mr. Lebowitz. But the bullpen, it seems to me, they're just going to kind of go into this and say, all right, we don't have a great group to start. We can build it up during the season. And Matt, you mentioned, you know, they might trade for somebody at the deadline. I'm worried they can't afford to wait that long. I'm not saying that this bullpen isn't good. I think it's bad. I think it's a liability. And how much of a hole can they afford to let themselves get in? You know, you have a competitive team. It's not like they're going to say, all right, well, you know, if we're in the race in June, we'll add somebody. You damn well better be in the race in June. How long can they afford to wait to put the pieces together?
Well, the Yankees have injury concerns too. And I guess the one concern with the bullpen, you can say, listen, they could always add at the deadline is, okay, well, does that put you in a hole? Is the bullpen going to be really, really bad? And by the time you get to July, you're trying to catch the Yankees instead of being ahead of the Yankees. I think the bullpen is a problem. I just don't know if it's going to matter because I think Barnes and Brazier will be effective in whatever their roles are. Like, I don't really care who's pitching the ninth inning. I really don't. I care that they don't have anybody else beyond Barnes and Brazier. Like, are they going to count on Tyler Thornburg again? Like, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, it's the Colton Brewers of the world, the Bobby Pointers, Marcus Walden. Like, these are all the names that you're going to be seeing this year. I just don't think that's good enough. I don't think they really need a closer, like, whatever. I know closer by committee is a dirty term. You don't want to use that. And would I feel much better if they had a closer entering the year? Yes. I'm just more concerned about their lack of depth in the bullpen. Like, all right, Barnes and Brazier, we've used them three out of the last four nights. We don't want to go to them tonight. Who the hell are you going to? Like, really? I mean, that's the real problem. I just don't think that they replaced any of the depth that they lost. Not that they really had a lot of depth in the first place last year. I'm just not so sure that they have enough options. I'm not concerned about the one or two options. I just don't think that they have enough options.
No, and I'm in the same boat there. It's more so, you know, you talk about them getting used three or four nights in a row. What happens when somebody gets hurt? What happens when Matt Barnes goes on the 10-day DL or Ryan Brazier goes on the 10-day DL? By the way, we're putting a lot of stock in a guy who at this time last year had most recently pitched in the Japanese minor league system. You know, I don't want to see a situation. I do think Durbin Feltman could be ready this year. I don't want to see a situation, though, where he's rushed up. I don't want to see guys that shouldn't be in the major leagues pitching in ball games, divisional ball games, even if it is in April or May. So that's more where my concern lies is, are we going to have to rush players up or throw non-major league players out there just to get through games? Or are they going to have to take guys out of the starting rotation just to fill the bullpen?
Yeah, I don't see them having to take guys out of the rotation. I mean, listen, when they get to the playoffs, they'll do what they did last year.
Right,
they'll
naturally
use the Rover. They'll use Evaldi. They'll use Porcello. The key is obviously getting there and winning the division. And that's really the only place where I think this bullpen could hurt them early on in the year. You don't want to, you know, be four or five games back of the Yankees by the time you hit July and you're like, okay, well, we'll go out and we'll add bullpen pieces. Guys, you can always add bullpen pieces in the playoffs. And this bullpen's going to look way different in August than it's going to look in April. Because as you said, Durbin Feltman, I think theoretically will be ready by that point, by April. Darwinson Hernandez is a guy that I think we should get really excited about. I think he's going to have an impact. So you could see two impact pitchers from the minor league system playing a big role on this Red Sox team this summer and towards the end of the summer in Feltman and Hernandez. And then all of a sudden you add two pieces like that. And listen, not that you necessarily want to count on it, but let's say that both of those things happen. And I don't think that's entirely unrealistic. Your bullpen looks way different and is way better. So, and then maybe you add a veteran guy at the deadline to shore things up, maybe a proven closer, maybe somebody who's closed some games or a veteran setup guy. All of a sudden you've got four or five options, and that's more than enough with your starting rotation in the playoffs. That doesn't help you in April, though. So that's my main concern.
So do you trust Dombrowski to be able to manage this effectively? You know, last year they had bullpen concerns. They didn't do anything. It paid off, as we saw. But even in years past, he's overspent on specific veterans and wasted certain prospects. And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Do you trust that he'll be able to make the move that's necessary without giving away too much?
Put it this way, I trust him to be able to identify the right arm if they choose to go out and get the right arm. I mean, they've done that the last few years. They went out and got Brad Ziegler for nothing. He was effective. They went out and got Addison Reed for nothing. He was effective. John Farrell mismanaged both of them and didn't use them appropriately, and it didn't really matter in the end. Last year, I mean, listen, he probably still should have gone out and gotten that year's version of Addison Reed or Brad Ziegler. He didn't, and it didn't burn them. So I'm just a little bit worried
It be Nathan Eovaldi in some way?
Oh, could be. Well, I guess it's a fair point. It's a fair point. But I feel like that more has to do with Alex Cora and his willingness to use Nathan Eovaldi and willingness to manage Eovaldi. All right, you know, you're going to be in the bullpen this day. You're going to start game three. You're going to be in the bullpen this day. You're going to start game four. Or you're going to be in the bullpen this day and you're going to pitch 1, 2, and 7 innings in game three of the World Series. Like, that's more on Cora than I think it is on Dombrowski. Dombrowski got him enough arms and Cora got creative. And the Red Sox should have enough arms based on how good their starting rotation is. I mean, they probably have, you could argue, maybe the best starting rotation, the best starting five entering baseball in 2019. That's good enough to carry you through a regular season. So that's why I think they'll be able to mask the bullpen issues, particularly early on, because, listen, all right, so a bullpen blows one game a week or whatever, and that's a real disaster. Their starting rotation is still probably good enough to win them 3 or 4 of those games anyway.
Okay. Interesting. So, and we've talked a lot about the bullpen, and there's a lot more to the team, and we don't have a lot of time left. So I want to make sure we get to the lineup. And, you know, not to sound too negative, because I keep saying, shouldn't we worry about this? Shouldn't we worry about that? But it seems to be the case with the Red Sox in the last couple of years, either everybody overachieves or everybody underachieves. There hasn't been much middle ground, right? Take 2013 and 2014. 2013, every what if went right. 2014, right. Every what if went wrong. They have a lot of talent in the lineup, but everybody played to the tip top of their potential last year. Where should our expectations be offensively, especially for the guys who were at that elite level, Mookie Betts, JD Martinez? Where should our expectations be for these guys as we enter 2019?
All right, so let's just say for the sake of discussion that Mookie Betts doesn't have an MVP caliber season this year, and he's just a tick below that. Let's say JD Martinez doesn't repeat his production from last year and is a tick below that, or the injury concerns pop up again with JD Martinez. I still think there's enough depth in this lineup because, you know, let's say that those two things happen. Does Rafael Devers take a step forward this year? Because I feel like he's primed to do that. And it sounds like they're going to hit him higher in the lineup. He's going to have more protection. That's good. Xander Bogaerts, I'm anticipating he'll have another good year too if he stays healthy. Contract year, Alex Cora's philosophy to be more aggressive as a hitter certainly paid off for him. I think there's a lot of depth in this lineup. So I think, listen, are they going to be as good as last year? Maybe, maybe not. That probably all depends on Betts and Martinez. But I don't think you're going to see some type of, you know, precipitous drop-off. I would be shocked if that happened.
Does Benintendi have room to grow?
Yeah, he does. He has room to grow, more power potentially. I don't think there's a lot of pop in that bat, but he had 2 home runs after the All-Star break. I'm not a huge fan, though, of Benintendi leading off. I like Betts as a leadoff hitter. I don't care if he hits 30 solo home runs. I don't care. He's a spark plug. It takes his speed out of the game because now he's one spot down in the order ahead of, say, Devers or Bogaerts or Martinez or whoever's going to be hitting behind him. So I'm not a huge fan of that. I think Benintendi is the perfect 2-hitter. He can handle the bat well. He can use all fields. He puts his bat on the ball, doesn't strike out a lot. Like, that's a perfect 2-hitter. So that's where I think, like, is he a prototypical leadoff hitter? I'm not so sure. I'd like to see him hitting 2, but to answer your question, does he have, you know, the room to grow? Yeah, absolutely he does.
What do you expect to see from Dustin Pedroia this year, obviously dealing with injuries in the past? Will he play any role, any productive role with the Red Sox this season?
I expect to see nothing. Does that answer your question?
It does.
There's a reason we love you on this show, Matt. We've been screaming about that for 2 weeks. All right, before we wrap this up here, just want to throw out some predictions because we love doing predictions on the show. They're always wrong. Our pick for Rookie of the Year last year, both mine and Lebowitz, was not Shohei Ohtani. That's literally what we wrote. We didn't pick a player. We just wrote not Shohei Ohtani.
Wrong.
Right. And clearly we don't know baseball rookies, so we're going to avoid that one this year. Real quick, your AL MVP and AL and NL MVP.
Let's go in the American League. I mean, Mike Trout, you probably have to, right? I mean, that, I guess that's a really easy and boring thing to say, but I'll go Mike Trout. I mean, is Mookie Betts going to win back-to-back MVPs? I'm not so sure. I mean, maybe, you know, I like Francisco Lindor a lot too. If the Indians, you know, get back to the playoffs, I mean, they're obviously not as good as they've been in the last 2 years. So if they get back there, you feel like, you know, Frankie Lindor is going to be a huge reason why. So I'll go with Trout with Lindor as a very close second. American League Cy Young, I mean, take your pick, really. I mean, I don't want to be wishy-washy here, but, you know, if Chris Sale stays healthy, he could win the Cy Young, but I'm not believing he's going to stay healthy. Like, it could be Verlander, it could be Kluber, it could be Blake Snell again. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not even going to venture to pick an American League Cy Young. In the National League, I mean, you know, give me Nolan Arenado again. You know, if the Rockies, and I think they're going to have another good season, I could see Arenado winning the National League's MVP. I know it was Yelich last year, but I like Arenado a lot. And, you know, National League Cy Young, you know, it's hard to pick against Max Scherzer, to be totally honest, with how dominating he was last year. DeGrom had an historically good year, so I'm not going to take DeGrom again. He's not going to repeat that. Max Scherzer has to be the safe bet. I mean, this guy is still one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's on his way to Cooperstown. I'll take Scherzer again.
All right, one more, because I know you got to go. And then when you hop off, Lebowitz and I, for those listening, Lebowitz and I will give our picks. Give me one team you think is going to surprise people in a positive way this year, either league. One team that's going to surprise people in a positive way and one team that's going to disappoint, one team that everybody's too high on.
It's going to be some team from the AL Central, because I think that division is absolute garbage and is more proof that baseball should not have three divisions. They should have two. You know, maybe the Chicago White Sox. And listen, they could lose 100 games or they could just all of a sudden be competitive. They've got a lot of kids coming up. They want to keep Jimenez in the minor leagues for service time, which is a story for another day. But when Jimenez comes up, when some of those kids come up, I think the White Sox could surprise just based on how awful, truly awful that division is. And a team that I think, you know, could fall back to the pack. The Atlanta Braves, they've got concerns in their pitching staff. I'm not so convinced about their bullpen. They were kind of a year ahead of schedule last year, and I feel like people are maybe overrating them a little bit based on the year that they had last year. I think the Braves, not to say a surprise and like they're all of a sudden in fifth place, but I see them falling back this year. I don't see them winning the National League East the way they did last year.
He is Matt McCarthy. He is the host of the Hardcore Baseball Podcast. You can find that on 98.5thesportshub.com. Their season preview is up, so go check that out after you're done listening to us. Matt, thanks so much for taking the time.
Barth Lebowitz, always good to be on with you guys. Have a good one.
Thanks for coming on, Matt.
Anytime.
All right, so Lebowitz, we finish things up here. And again, to remind everybody, new format to the show, about 20-minute episodes. It's going to be a little longer because it's a season preview, but we're going to have about 20-minute episodes, do them two or three times a week. Let's go back to the question at hand, though, here. AL Cy Young, AL MVP. Lebowitz, who do you got?
AL MVP, I mean, Trout's going to be the guy most people pick to just be a little bit different. I'm going to go Aaron Judge. I think last year he dealt with injuries.
God. Jake Asman's gotten you, hasn't he?
No, but his numbers are exceptional. I think he's going to put up power numbers that are – it's going to leave voters, you know, no question of who's going to be the guy to give that nod to. Obviously, Trout is probably going to win it, but I think Aaron Judge is a real dark horse. I think most people have him finishing top five in the MVP voting, and a lot of it comes down to health. But given the power – that we've seen and just how clutch he was during the postseason, one of the few guys for the Yankees that actually had a good ALDS. I think he'll build off of that and have another great season. Cy Young, I'm going to go Chris Sale. And this is why. I think Chris Sale last year went a little bit too hard to start out. If you remember before he was injured, he was the hardest throwing starting pitcher in baseball. I see him as a guy who's going to adjust this season and start to maybe take a couple miles per hour off that fastball and rely on being a pitcher and not, you know, that power pitching, hard thrown lefty. So I think he's going to win the Cy Young. You want me to do NL as well?
I'm going to throw mine out real quick. And I actually pretty much agree with you. I think Trout wins the MVP. And I think the guy's a competitor. And the whole talk about Mike Trout's boring, nobody pays attention to Mike Trout, that hit ahead when he signed his contract. I think he knows he has to do something spectacular to get noticed at being on the second team in Los Angeles. I think he comes out and just goes on a tear. For me, the AL Cy Young, I'm actually going to get a little unorthodox with this. I'm going to go Eduardo Rodriguez. I wasn't planning on going that when we started.
That's a little unorthodox.
I wasn't, you know what? I want to put this out there because I have a theory. You got Chris Sale. You got Chris Sale, who really should be a Cy Young winner. And then David Price, Rick Porcello. Who am I leaving out here?
Nathan Eovaldi.
Thank you, Nathan Eovaldi. You've got all these names that are just these heroes now in Boston, right? And then you have Eduardo Rodriguez, who he's got to know the only thing anybody ever says about him is he's going to get hurt. If he puts together a full season, I think he could be in the conversation. So, again, do I think he'll put together a full season? I don't know. But I want to say that if Eduardo Rodriguez can put together a 30-start season, he will be in the running for AL Cy Young. Like Matt said, I don't really have a favorite. So I want to pick – I was going to say Chris Sale. I want to pick something different from you. If Eduardo Rodriguez puts together a full season, just, you know, keep an eye on it. All right, NL, go ahead.
And just I think.
Yeah, go ahead. You can call me a lunatic now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't. I just don't think we've seen enough to really warrant that prediction. I think that, you know, he's always been a talented lefty, but again, he just hasn't been able to stay on the field.
It would just be one of those classic stories where, you know, you have all these studs and then that guy comes. You see it every once in a while in sports. And I just think he's going to get a lot of chances because the Red Sox are obviously going to be very careful with how they use Chris Sale. He's going to have a very short leash. I think David Price is going to have a short leash because he's getting up there in age and pitches thrown. And I think they're going to want to save him for the playoffs. Eovaldi, I think, could end up, you know, doing some emergency work in the bullpen. So I think that, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez is going to have to be the guy, as scary as this is, who you give a longer leash, you let go deeper into games to help save the bullpen, and it's going to give him a chance to pile up the strikeout numbers and pile up the wins numbers because he's going to be going deeper into games and the lineup may be able to flip some games for him. So I think he could end up putting together a pretty impressive statistical season, again, if he stays healthy.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think that if anyone wins a Cy Young and it's not named Chris Sale on the Red Sox, it's going to be Rick Porcello just because – you know, he's the one guy who's had the longevity, who stayed healthy and always racks up innings. So all he has to do is to put together a decent season or at least a decent second half. And then maybe he'll be in the conversation for the NL MVP. I'm going to go Nolan Arenado. He just had that big extension in Colorado, but he's someone who had an exceptional season last year. He's been one of the top players in the league for the past 5 years. So, you know, it's up for grabs. It can be a lot of different guys, but I think given the fact that Arenado's in the conversation year after year, he's my favorite to win it this season. For the NL Cy Young, I'm going to go Jake DeGrom back-to-back. He's building off of an amazing year last season, and I think there's going to be a new energy in New York and Queens with the roster moves that they've made. They're going to take a notch up. I don't think they're winning the division, but they'll definitely fight for a wild card spot.
Yep.
And who knows? Maybe they will fight for that division because it's pretty even.
I think we all know it's the Mets. They worked out at the Carrier Dome for some reason.
Yeah, I don't understand. I saw that as well. I don't know the story behind that. Hey, who knows?
The story is it's the Mets. They're dumb. That's the story.
I love the Mets, though. I love the Mets, though. I don't have a second team, but I have a soft spot in my heart for the Mets.
The Mets. Do you know the show Destroyed in Seconds?
I do not.
The Mets are like, okay, it's basically exactly what it sounds like. It's a show that was hosted by the great Ron Pitts, who was at one point an NFL commentator, has the most badass name and most great badass man. Voice ever. Look it up. The episodes are on YouTube, but it's basically it's car crashes, boat crashes, factories exploding. You know, it's destroyed in seconds.
I think I know what you're talking about.
The appeal of the Mets is like the appeal of Destroyed in Seconds. You don't know how it's going to go wrong, but you know it's going to go wrong, and you want to watch it because you know it's going to be spectacular. My picks, NL MVP, as a wise man once said, follow the money. I'm going to go Bryce Harper. I think he has a lot to prove. I think that he's a guy that's going to, you know, having played in Washington, which not the worst fan base, but definitely not the best, I think he's going to be reinvigorated playing in the city of Philadelphia. I think there's some good pieces around him in that lineup that will help him out. I actually think Bryce Harper lives up to the contract in year one, although I will say, and you can call this a prediction, you can call it speculation, it would be very Philadelphia for Bryce Harper to go out and win the MVP and then just fall apart in the playoffs. That would be so classic Philly, and I could see it happening.
And I would like that. I hate the Phillies as much. I love
seeing that happen.
I don't hate the Phillies. I hate Philadelphia, though.
Right, exactly.
So,
and you know, I it seems like the kind of thing that Harper seems like the kind of guy I would enjoy seeing that happen to.
I want to
get one of my all-time favorites in Jonathan Papelbon. I've never felt the same about the guy.
Let me revise that statement. I actually like a lot of people from Philadelphia, so I feel bad.
You tolerate them. That's fair. You can say
I actually do. I do like. It's weird because I like a ton of people from Philadelphia now that I think about it. But for some reason, the city as a whole just really
it's a trash city. It's a garbage city.
It is gross.
It's knockoff Boston. It's a poor man's Boston. We really invented America. They invented America.
It's like an in between of New York and Boston, except it's way like worse than both.
If you took the worst parts of both of those cities and put them together, you're right. That's what you get. My Cy Young pick, I'm actually going to kind of stick with you. You had DeGrom. I'm going to go Noah Syndergaard. The way he's talked this offseason, especially in the last couple of weeks, you got to come out and play big to back that up. You really do. He's trashed the organization. You know, he's just a guy that He really has to back up his words, and I think he will do it. I think he has the talent to do it. I love his mentality. Absolute killer instinct on the mound. I'm going to go. I think Syndergaard has not just a Cy Young year, but not like an all-time year. I think that, you know, the way he's talked, the way it's gone the last couple of years, he has a lot to prove to a lot of people, and he's got the killer instinct to do it.
So you have DeGrom, who's coming off of a historic season, you could argue, even though he only won 10 games. And then you have Syndergaard.
Because he plays for the Mets.
Yeah, no. But the thing is, they've added to that lineup. They definitely added to that lineup. Yeah, you have him coming back.
34-year-old Robinson Cano.
He's still decent. He's not terrible.
All right, so hang on. Let me transition into this then while you make this argument. Team that's going to surprise everybody. Is it the Mets for you?
It is the Mets for me. I think it is. You know what? I'm done with the, you know, their loser franchise. They're always going to lose.
36. I underestimated, by the way. Go ahead.
He is old. He's very old. Him and he's older than Pedroia. Jesus.
Yeah.
I think they do have a step up year. It was only a few years ago they made it to the World Series, and that starting rotation, although they've lost some pieces, it still has a lot of those top tier guys. And I think if they can stay together, hold together in that lineup, you know, maybe overperforms a little bit. That's a team that could definitely surprise some people. So that's my surprise team, especially when you consider the Phillies made a huge splash this offseason. The Braves are coming off of a decent year, and the Nationals have always been in the hunt. And the Marlins are not even in the conversation at all because they're irrelevant. But considering all that stuff, I think that they have as good of a shot to come out on top in that division as anyone.
I'm going to go with the Nationals, and I know – the Nationals are considered a pretty good team, but people are going to talk about what's the hangover going to be like losing Bryce Harper. They're no longer the best team in the division. People are going to have the Phillies ahead of them. I think they have something to prove now that they lost Bryce Harper. It's not an old franchise. You know, obviously it is going back to Montreal, but in its existence in Washington, Bryce Harper's really their guy. I would put him ahead of Strasburg as the face of that organization. They lose him. I think they've got some good young players coming in. I like the mix of youth and experience they have there. And again, I think they have a lot to prove. That's going to be a team that should play with the mean streak this year. We'll see if they do. But if they do, I think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they finish ahead of the Phillies. I know I just said Bryce Harper was going to have this great season. I think the Nationals could have a great season too. So that's my team that's going to surprise positively. Who's your disappointment?
I don't know if I have one disappointment. I like what McCarthy said. I think the AL Central is abysmal. There's just not really much going on there at all. So I think maybe that division.
You can label a whole division. Look, I'm totally fine being overly negative for the sake of being overly negative on the show. If you want to label an entire division a disappointment, you have my blessings.
Wait, okay. If we're making the rules more broad, I'm going to say the biggest disappointment is the length of these games. That's what I'm going. Might be a little unoriginal. Might be something people complain about a lot.
If we're going to go that abstract, I mean, there's a million things you could do.
That's true. We should probably keep this Pandora box closed.
Just wait till we get to next year with the jerseys. It's going to be a huge. I'm going to throw a fit. Do you know what's happening next year?
Are they putting logos on them?
So Nike is taking over as the official uniform. That right there should be cringe.
Who's it now? Majestic or
Majestic, which is owned by Nike, but it's going to become Nike, like Nike.
Okay.
And Majestic has their logo on the sleeve, which is fine. Nike's going to put a big Nike swoosh right on the chest of the jersey, just like in college baseball. So imagine the classic Red Sox, the classic Yankees uniform unchanged for decades, and you're just going to have a Nike swoosh right there, right on the chest.
So
I'm going to save my rant for next year because I'm going to be yelling and screaming and pitching a fit. But you know what? I will say ahead of time, I have a team in mind for biggest disappointment, but the fact that the MLB is letting this happen and is not, you know, it's like a train. You got to start applying the brakes to it early. The MLB is not already giving us some indication that they won't let Nike do this is a disappointment for me. I'm going to get mad a year in advance. That's how egregious this is.
So will they do that with like the retro jerseys? Red Sox?
Yeah, everything. Nike swish on the front because it won't be on the sleeve anymore. Right? The uniform supplier has the right to put their logo on the jersey. That's fair. But I think on the sleeve it's on the sleeve in football. It's on the back of the neck in hockey, which – sleeve's probably better, but the hockey placement isn't bad. In basketball, it's on the front, but it's always been on the front, so I kind of give Nike a pass for basketball.
And there's no sleeves.
Right, and there's no sleeve to put it on, and the NBA logo goes on the back of the neck, which, you know, fine. You got to have the league logo on there. But although I would rather have it swished, I would rather have the league logo on the front and the uniform provider on the back. But baseball is just so old school. It's going to look, it's going to look awful, and it's going to take forever to get used to.
I don't know. I think, you know, if you're Nike, it's millions of dollars of free advertising. Well, not free, but it's advertising every year. I get why they'd want to do it.
Put it on the hat. Put it on the sleeve. Put it on the pants. Although I think it actually is going to be on the pants too.
Probably
don't put it front and center on the jersey. That's all I'm asking. And by the way, my team disappointment, because we said 20-minute shows, and this is going beyond that now, and I didn't say it'd be a little longer. My team disappointment is actually going to be the Boston Red Sox, like we talked about. Look, in terms of disappointment and step back, they won 108 games last year. They had very little roster turnover. I think a lot of people are expecting them, like I said at the top of the show, to just hit the ground running, pick up where they left off last year, and keep it going. I don't think that's realistic. Now, a big step back for the Red Sox is still 94-95 wins in a wild card berth, which is not a bad season by any means.
That is a big step back, though, compared to what they just did.
I think where the team finishes versus the expectations, I think the Red Sox have the biggest drop of any team in baseball, just because, again, the bullpen worries me, and they played it to maintain the level of play they held last year. It's hard enough to do for 1 year, forget two. I'm just trying to be realistic and temper my expectations. Yeah. They still are as much of a World Series contender as anybody, but I mean, 108 wins and then to roll through the playoffs like they did is outlandish.
Well, I think the fact that, again, you talk about the return of most of that roster, and the bullpen's definitely a concern. They still have the best starting rotation in baseball, I'd argue. They still have the best lineup in baseball, I'd argue. I think they're going to have a lot of leads, and I think that they'll be able to deal with, you know, a below-average bullpen for the time being. Again, they won't be able to last the entire year and win the AL East, which is going to be the most difficult division in baseball by a mile. They won't be able to do that with the bullpen as is. But I think they'll be able to pull it together. And another thing that McCarthy mentioned earlier is you have so many guys playing for big contracts, Betts, Bogarts, Bradley. J.D. Martinez has an opt-out option after this year. You have Porcello, who might be a free agent at the end of the season if he doesn't extend. I think that does breed, usually with a team like this and players like this, it does breed more productivity. And I think we'll see that. Will they win 108 games this year? No, they're going to be a little bit worse. They're still going to be one of the best teams in the MLB, top three for sure.
And I do agree with that. I just think that I don't think this team will live up to its expectations, because the way the expectations are for them right now, I don't think that's possible. And that's the point. I don't want people coming at me when the Red Sox, you know, are in the ALCS this year saying, you said they'd be a disappointment. You know what? If they win 100 games this year on the dot, 100 games and lose in the ALCS, I believe that's a disappointment compared to where the expectations are for them right now. I do.
Well, World Series win. Or at least getting there. And also winning the division, which that cannot be overstated, the importance of it. And when you have the Yankees, who are also returning a lot of guys, they got better this season.
The Yankees did more this offseason than the Red Sox did. I don't want to sound like Charlie Kelly and say more better, but the Yankees had more improvement this offseason than the Red Sox did.
And the reality is, you have the Yankees, who are, you know, arguably the second best team in the league, in the MLB, that is, and the Astros, arguably the second or third best team in the MLB.
The Astros are.
You think they're past that?
They're going to have some playoff hangover from that series last year. I do. I don't. They were another team I thought about saying was going to take a step back.
Okay, and you might be right, but right now they're top dog for sure.
Fair.
It's going to be tough for the Red Sox to navigate. Not to mention the Rays, who will probably take a little bit of a step up.
You say the Rays?
The Rays in the AL East, that is
the team that's closing half their ballpark.
That's nothing to do with the roster.
No, it does, because that team's clearly cash strapped, and they're going to have a fire sale in July.
Oh, you think? They won 90 games. I'm going off of last year. They won 90 games.
That was a fluke.
Yeah, maybe. But if you're a team that overperforms, you're still a threat.
The only way the Rays win 90 games is if they get to play 120 games against the Orioles and the Blue Jays.
But they won 90 games in a division where two other teams won 100. So, like, you can't discount.
You had two of the best and two of the worst, and they were right there in the middle. I feel like it's a wash.
Then they should have been 500.
Baltimore and Toronto were awful last year.
Then they should have been 500, right?
Yeah, but they also got to play the AL Central. I mean, it goes back to something I said last year, where if the Red Sox had played in the AL Central, they would have won 130 games.
Baseball,
so there's a lot of parity, but it's in pockets. in the MLB right now, which is good and bad. If you're a fan of an AL East team, it's good because you're watching meaningful baseball every night. If you're a fan of an AL Central team, it sucks because whenever your team plays outside the division, you're getting your teeth kicked in. So,
okay,
you know, take it for what it is.
I can see that.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. First show of the new format. We will get a show in probably early next week, I'd like to think, with whatever the big story is. We'll take one story, we'll tackle it, and then we'll have another show a couple days later. That's the new format. We're going to try this out at least for a month or two, see how it goes, and we'll decide from there. Let us know what you think on Twitter, at Calling It Podcast, and you can check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Any final thoughts here, Lebowitz?
I'm excited. It's baseball season tonight, opening game, opening day, and I'm just pumped to see what will come out of this this season.
Let's not forget opening day was really a week ago, but yeah, no, that's that is a good point to leave it on there.
Yeah, so I'm excited. I look forward to see how Alex Cora handles this season, and I'm optimistic in the Red Sox for sure.
All right, we will discuss it on Tuesday, how the first series looks. Again, at Calling It Podcast on Twitter, clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.